Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and thank you for joining me on another Listen to Older Voices. This is the second and final part of my talk with 78-year-old Leslie Roxburgh. Last week we learned that Leslie was born in 1931 in Victoria. She became a nurse and met and married Ray, whose work took him and Leslie to a number of locations, including the Upper Yarra Dam. This week, Leslie continues to freely share many stories, including how she got a driver's license and the reasons leading to her eventually giving up that license. We learn about her interest in the local historical society and more about her childhood. But for me, it's her story about a neighbouring farmer who is badly burnt in a tractor accident that I found engrossing and reinforces the stories of how tough life was on the land in years gone past. But now, we pick up with Leslie talking about her and Ray living while he worked on the Upper Yarra Dam. So you moved with Ray up to the dam, you lived in quarters there, and then the work finished there, or did he get sick of doing it?
He got sick of it. He went somewhere else. He was working for a chap with a refrigerator mechanic.
And where did you go?
Well, I was in Coburg for a while, and then I came back here because I couldn't manage it. There was very little money. And I knew that if I came home here, I didn't have to pay rent. I had milk, I had butter.
You could look after the kids better.
I had chooks.
Yes.
You know, I could feed
them.
Yeah,
why would you live in Coburg? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, I came home then.
So Ray was away working and you were here with the kids.
And at once, when my youngest daughter was a baby, I still couldn't drive a car. We didn't have a car to start with.
Right. What year is this roughly? Are we in the 40s or 50s now?
In the 50s.
50s.
52 I was married.
Oh, that's right. Of course you were. You said that. Yes.
And we got a car in 1954, but I didn't drive, not for a long time.
Right.
Marilyn's 40s. Do you know Meryl?
Oh, yes, I know Meryl.
Well, she's my baby.
Yes.
And it wasn't until after she was born that I learned to drive.
I don't want to distract you, but do you remember learning to drive?
Oh, yes, that was a bloody nightmare.
What was it about it that was a nightmare?
No, I was just too nervous. I just couldn't cope with it. No, I drove up to Canberra. My husband was up there one stage. And I was so pleased with myself. I'd driven all that way to Canberra. Canberra's a terrible place to find your way around. And all the comment was from Ray was, you can drive, you just don't want to. And then he sent me back. When I came back, I had to bring a motor down to North Melbourne from Canberra.
In the car?
In the car. And I had to drive down Sydney Road and find this place down there, you know, trams and everything.
Yes.
And I was so pleased about that. I went up to the university because my eldest daughter was working up there. Went up there to tell her all about it. Couldn't find her. She was out. She wasn't at work. And then I couldn't find where I parked the car.
Oh, gosh. I wonder how many people listening have been through a similar situation. I have. Oh, it's scary. It's frustrating. You get angry. Oh, dear. How long did it take you to locate the car?
Quite a while because I got a taxi. And I had Marilyn with me. I don't know how old she was.
Couldn't have been that old.
No.
Lost the car. Did you ever tell Ray that or did you keep that one quiet?
Oh, I don't know. The girls knew they knew about it. But I got his motor there all right.
Look, I reckon if you could have got down Sydney Road like that, you could have driven anywhere.
Well, after that, I did drive. Well, I drove backwards and forwards to Fairfield and I've driven lots of places, but I don't think I could do it now. And a while ago, I bought a new car.
Right.
And that was barn doing. It just goes too fast. you read about these people that plough the houses and fences. And
you understand why.
And I thought, that's not going to be me. I'm not going to do that. I'm safer not to drive.
You don't feel safe driving. It's silly driving.
That's right. And it's sort of a bit frustrating. But I mean, I lived out here for years without a car. And I can't see why I can't do it now.
Look, people listening would probably be asking themselves, well, how, if you don't drive now, how do you get your groceries? How do you do things?
Well, I've got a friend who comes and picks me up on Friday.
Okay.
And takes me, we go up to the nursing home. We spend 2 hours up there.
Right.
With the oldies. We have lunch. Then we go shopping and she brings me home.
You know? So it all works out.
Yeah.
It all works out. When you came back from Coburg to here, was that the last time you moved from here?
Except I went into Wurrielik and lived in there when Marilyn was a baby, because the husband was away again. There was no way to get the children to school.
He spent a lot of time away working, didn't he?
Yeah.
That must have been a little bit tough on
him. It was. It was that really broke us up, really, because he never came home again until about 10 months before he died.
I think most people listening would say, you know, if you're going to have a partnership, there has to be a partnership, isn't there?
Yeah.
More than just in name.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was hard.
So then that was how it went, I suppose.
Mm. So you never went back to work again?
Yes. Marilyn was about 14 when I went back to work.
As a nurse?
Yeah.
Whereabouts did you work?
Well, first I worked at what's called the Hillsong District Nursing Home, which was used to be Le Chateau. There was a 14-bed nursing home opened up here at Yarra Junction.
Oh, yes.
In 1981.
And you worked there too?
So I transferred over there because it was easier. And I stayed there until I retired about 16 years ago, I suppose.
When you used the word retired, I had this feeling that that didn't mean that you stopped.
No, I got a bit involved with the nursing home later. I didn't go back straight away, but I go up there once a week now. And I belong to, as I say, I didn't join the Historical Society till then.
Now, hang on, for people listening, which Historical Society is this? Is this the Yarra Junction one? Yes, I want the whole thing.
The Upper Yarra Valley Historical Society, Inc.
Inc. What made you join?
Well, I had a friend and she sort of thought it'd be a good idea if I joined it. She had belonged to it, but she was fading out of it. And they'd had quite a few left and they were getting a bit desperate like we are now. The young people.
What is the role of a historical society?
Well, really to preserve the history of the place.
I mean, what sort of things in your historical society have you been able to sort of keep and maintain?
Well, they've got injured there. Well, they're sort of not getting the best care that they could. And we've got tools and we've got household stuff.
From different periods. I mean, what are some of the oldest things you have? I mean, in terms of, like, household stuff, how far back does that go?
Oh, way back. A lot of tools there they lived in, used in the logging. But I do some wonderful photos of them scaling up the trees.
Because, again, for people listening in other states, the Yarra Valley was a real timber industry area, wasn't it? Particularly around
Yarra Junction was the second busiest rail siding for timber in the world.
In the world?
Seattle was the first.
Right.
Yarra Junction was second.
Well, that sort of history really is worth preserving.
And see, they had the train went up to Warburton. The normal train went up to Warburton. Then they had these, what they called tram tracks. You couldn't call them train lines because the government didn't own them. They were privately owned, so they were tram tracks.
Trams.
And the tram tracks went out to Pearl Town, up into the mills from Yarra Junction. And there was one here at Wurri. Used to come down to the railway station. Used to come out along Cockatoo Road and up the Sheep Station Creek Road. When I first came here, you could still have, there were still some sleepers down there.
Goodness.
And my mother-in-law, when she first came out here, her furniture came out on the tram track, and any groceries came
tram
out.
Tram track, yes, not train track.
Yes.
That's right.
Any groceries came out on the tram.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
Now, does the Historical Society like yours keep records of all of this?
Some of it, yes.
Some of it. Because as the years go on, this becomes more legend than reality, and it's good to have something to actually see, isn't it?
Our people used to ride the tram tracks up to Bowtown. That was their only transportation, because a lot of it got destroyed in the 39 fires.
Which you were too young to remember, I guess, were you?
I remember we were living at Wandon.
Right.
And we lived behind the recreation ground. And there was a ring of pine trees out there, and we spent most of our summer out there under the pine trees. It was the coolest space.
Of course.
And I can remember seeing the mountains a lot.
Oh, really?
39, I would have been about 8, I suppose.
Yes. Black Saturday, which was terrible.
Yeah.
It must be very hard trying to compare one with the other, but would those fires of 39 been as bad in your recollection?
We didn't have the population then.
No.
We had a lot of people living up there, and it was the end of, I think, having the mills out there. They had mill houses and people lived up there. They didn't live up there much anymore. They sort of...
That finished all that off.
Yeah, came down the junction or
because, whatever. And they didn't have the firefighters and the equipment they have today either. You had people with good intention but little equipment and training.
Well, they didn't have any equipment.
No.
Sugar bag, I think.
Sugar bags, yes.
I remember about the same time they had bad fires at Mount Evelyn, and Dad was over there fighting them. And he was saying about one place, they had sort of creepers all around it.
Right.
Bush house sort of thing. In those days, there were a lot of holiday homes up here from Mount Evelyn right up. People used to just come up weekenders. And they put the fire out in this place, and then it started up again, and they went back, and this trellis, whatever, fell on a chap across his back. And Dad said, that's it. They walked out. They just let the place burn.
Yes.
You know, it was just 2 days.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, the program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their life. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Leslie.
Another funny story. There was a chap over there had some geese, and the geese got overcome with the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
So this chap gave Dad one of the geese.
Right.
And Dad rode a bike. He didn't have a car. He rode his bike home from Mount Evelyn to Wanda with the geese across there.
That would have been a sight.
Well, it was a dead goose.
I was dead. Oh, well, thank goodness for that. I was wondering how he was going
to... dead goose. But somebody reported him to the police and said that he'd stolen this goose.
I'll have to add to the story. People can't mind their own business, can they?
So Dad had to sort of get the chap that had given
it to sort it all out, yes. Oh, dear. If you were sitting with your grandchildren and they said to you, Nana, what was life like then? What would you say to them?
Well, it was a lot harder, and it wasn't the material things, it wasn't the money. Today, my grandchildren, I just think it's everything's given to them, isn't it?
It is. It's provided, yes. Mm. Do you think that makes for a better...
No, I don't.
Yes.
Mm. But, I mean, they're my grandchildren. They're not my children.
Exactly. Well, and again, we could take it away from your grandchildren specifically, because what we're talking about here, I think, is really how children all over the place are treated. So it's children all over. It's not just your grandchildren. No, there's value, isn't there, for very children learning?
Very materialistic world. Mm.
Would you see that as one of the biggest changes over your lifetime? Is this materialism?
Probably, yes. I mean, I started at the age of 8. We had friends had a berry farm, and they had children my age. And we were allowed to pick blackberries for so many hours, and we got paid. And that was the first money I ever earned, picking blackberries. And then every school holidays, I worked in the orchard around Wandon, picking berries or picking cherries or...
Which isn't easy work, is it?
No. And that money wasn't mine to go out and spend it. It buy me school books for next year or the new pair of shoes or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, you didn't. You just didn't get handed these things on a platter.
No. And again, it's not just that you weren't handed toys and things like that on a platter, but you had to go out and earn your books for school. Yeah. Which kids today would look at you as if that's about the toughest thing you'd ever make them do. Yes.
Yeah. And I worked in that orchard until I went nursing.
Mm.
And then when Marilyn was about four, I started again at a local place picking cherries. And that was all right. That only lasts about 6 weeks or something. But it ended up I'd thin the apples and pick the apples and prune the apples and more or less was a 12-month job.
Yes.
And it was good that, but I never considered going back nursing while I had the children because I felt that nursing, you've got to give your all to, you can't say, well, my kid's sick, I've got to stay home or doesn't work. But going to the orchard, I could take the children to school, go to the orchard, work until nearly time to knock off school, go and pick the kids up and come home.
So harder work, but gave you more freedom in some ways.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
And the kid, old Marilyn probably, I don't know whether Marilyn remembers, but the other children would. I used to milk a cow. I'd take the older children down to catch the bus to go to the high school, come back, milk the cow, run up, take the others to school. And that's hard work.
That's hard work.
Because I milked the cow down there where the dairy is.
Mm. And for people around here, it's very hilly.
Yeah.
It's not like we're on flat land here. No.
I can't do it now. I can't.
Oh, okay. Well, I think you've done your time. You've done it. I don't think you need to do it again to prove that. What would be some of the biggest changes you've seen across your life, Leslie?
Well, I suppose electricity here would be one.
Electricity, yeah, something we take for granted today.
Because we didn't have electricity until, I can't remember when.
Can you remember, not necessarily the day, but can you sort of remember the period when you got it and what sort of change that had on you?
Well, we didn't have a lot. It didn't change things a lot to start with. I was able to get a fridge. We didn't have a television for years.
Oh, no. Radio?
Radio, was that a battery radio?
How important was radio in the family?
Radio, when I was a little girl, we didn't have one. And my grandfather, when he retired and came up to live at one, he bought a radio. Grandpa was very fond of the cricket, the races, any sport, and the news. I was allowed to listen to 3AW, Nicky and Nancy Lee's Chatterbox Corner, which was for kids. And that's where Graham Kennedy started.
That's right, Graham and Nicky, of course.
That's right.
Yes.
And I think Mum, to the day she died, was a fan of Graham's.
Oh, she would have had a lot of company.
And I nearly went up and said to Nolene Brown, thank you for looking after Graham.
Yes.
Because she was talking about Bud Stillwell and how he kept on working. And she said he was a great actor and a good living man. And somebody asked her, who did she consider on a par with Bud as an actor? And she said, well, he's a Victorian, I know, but she said, Graham Kennedy. And I felt I should have gone up and said, thank you for looking after him.
Again, for people who are a lot younger than us, Graham Kennedy is just a name and a bit in history, but he was so popular, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He really was.
But he was very clever.
Clever, yes.
I know he was a fool to himself, but she said when he got older, he could cook. He was a very good cook. And he'd get out the recipe book and he'd have his gin and tonic. And he'd just, oh, I want to have that. He'd turn the page, he'd have another gin and tonic. And he'd end up, he wouldn't cook anything.
Too many gin and tonics.
So she said he just didn't look after himself. And he could have.
Yeah. Indeed.
Listen to older voices. The magic of memories.
Look, hopefully you've still got many, many years left yet in your life. Where do you see the future? What do you see yourself doing over the next 10 years?
I'd like to stay here, but I don't know whether I'll be able to. You know, I still get... I think Marilyn worries about me being out here. But I sort of go back in time. There wasn't neighbours when I lived out here first.
I can imagine.
The road stopped down there at the old house. There was no road beyond there. My mother-in-law paid to put a turntable in so that a taxi, and taxis in Borealy.
You could come out and turn around at least.
And take me to, if you want to go to the station.
Right.
Prior to that, in the early days, my mother-in-law had a horse and jinka. She didn't drive. And from there on up, the road was just a track. Men come up cutting firewood in their trucks or the tractors or whatever. And did you ever interview a Jack McElroy?
No, another local identity.
Yeah, he sadly passed away last year. When I came out here first, you came up the road and there was a gate. It was McElroy's gate. They owned 500 acres. And then there was another gate, and we owned 300 acres. There was another gate, and there was another 500 acres. That was McElroy's too.
Right.
When I first came out here, Wallace McElroy lived in a log cabin, which is, I believe, still down there.
A log cabin, goodness me.
Jack gave me some photos. Now, I don't know whether I kept some or took them up to the museum. Wallace, the father, lived there with his friend. And Jack and his mother lived in another log cabin up here. And Mrs. McElroy was very frail. My mother-in-law used to go up there perhaps once a month just so that she had a bit of company.
Mm.
Or if Mrs. McElroy, she had bronchitis a lot, and she would go out over down there to look after her. Mrs. Mac, she went into her nursing home, and Jack was up on his own, and he was fueling up his tractor and it ignited.
Oh.
And he got burnt badly. And it's exactly 3 km from the old house up to where he got burnt for the tractor. It was about 6 weeks after I'd got married. I wasn't here. I was down at Blackburn looking after the family because my mother was in hospital. Jack ran from up there down here.
Oh.
And I'd been talking to my mother-in-law a few weeks prior to that, and we were talking about birds, what to do with a bird. And of course the old adage was cover them with butter or grease or whatever. I said, no, you don't do that, Grandma. You wrap them in a sheet, put your hand, put it in a pillow, slip anything to cut out the air, but don't put anything on it. Because Jack arrived down there with nothing on with his boots, and she wrapped him in a sheet.
Mm.
Ray didn't have a car, but next door his uncle lived and he had a car. Ray rang him up. It was a Sunday, and Uncle George wouldn't drive Jack anywhere. But he lent Ray his car, and Ray drove it to Lillydale. And then they wanted Ray to take him through to the Royal Melbourne. Ray had a licence. He got to drive tractors on the Port of Works. He wasn't proficient at driving
cars. But they got him there one way or the other. They got
him. A taxi.
Taxi.
Oliver's taxi from Lillydale, very well known. They drove him to the Royal Melbourne. And he was very, very scarred.
Oh, bad.
His arms just about lost parts of his ears. And he was in hospital for a long, long time.
Oh, he would have been a mess, yes.
Yeah. I don't know how he lived, but he did. He lived to be 88, I think he was, 86 or something, when he died last year.
Tough. They bred them tough. But life was tough, wasn't it? I mean, those sorts of farm accidents could happen at any time.
If he hadn't have run down here, he would have been dead. He would have.
Exactly.
How he did it.
It was tough times, and you had to be tough to survive.
Went up to see Jack a couple of years ago, I had some friends with me, and we clocked the mileage. It was 3 km.
Exactly, yeah.
Because there's a road here now.
That's right. I remember there was a track too then. Yeah. That wouldn't have been easy, and he would have been in so much pain. Indeed. I've already said to you, I'd like to think you, and I'm sure you do, think you've got many years left yet. But eventually we all pass on. It's part of being alive. You know that. Eventually we pass on. When that time eventually does come, how would you like to be remembered by your family and friends?
Well, I've told Marilyn not to get disturbed because I live out here on my own. And don't get alarmed if she comes out one day and I'm in the garden, dead.
Mm.
Because that's where I'd like to go, I think.
In your garden.
Mm.
That'd be a lovely place to go. Yeah, yes. Doing what you enjoy doing.
You don't always get what you wish, though, do you?
You don't always get what you wish.
Look at that girl that died there, the polio girl that died. Mm. She was 23 when I first knew her. She was engaged to be married. She was an only child. Her parents were lovely, lovely people. Maybe she was spoiled, maybe she wasn't, because she was just a lovely person. She never came out of the respirator, and all she could move was, if you held her arm up like that, she could do that. That's all she could do. She couldn't feed herself.
Just move her fingers.
Mm-hmm. She couldn't do anything. And she lived like that for 60-odd years.
Makes those of us who are able-bodied realise just how lucky we are.
And yet they used to, like, going into a respirator is a very frightening thing.
Mm.
I think a lot died from fright and anything else. So the new people that went into a respirator, they'd put them up near June. And June had talked to them and, you know, to give them the ropes and all the rest of it. I think she saved a lot of people like that.
Yes.
And she was just a nice person. She, Eric, for the football, can't
we?
I won't hold it again.
Neither of us will hold that against her.
and life had been her oyster. She swam and she sang and...
So you never know when things are going to happen to you, do you? So you make the most of every moment. Yeah. Sounds like your philosophy.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think at this stage it might be a good place for us to finish, and I'd just like to thank you very much for sharing some of your story, Leslie.
I hope it's not... It's been a bit here and there.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Turak Times.